I'm Han Liu from the George Washington University, and today I will talk about graphene. It's a fine grain I/O management for graph computing, and this is a work with my advisor, Professor Haowei Huang. So many of you know that a graph exists in every corner of our daily life. Starting from the morning, you turn on your phone, check new feeds from Facebook. Actually, you know, Facebook is basically relying on social network. In this graph, every human being, you and me, we are vortices, and the relationship between the human beings are edges. So taking all of them together, they formulate a very large social network graph. Another very good example, or signature example, is like navigation system. Like, navigation system actually is relying on roadmap to do the navigation. In this roadmap, every exit is a vortex. The road between the exits together formulate the edge. So this formula, this very large navigation system out there, they help us. Well, through listening to my talk and through the introduction, you may think, what Han Liu is doing, right? So you go ahead, Google me, kind of get my personal website. Actually, all the websites in the internet formulate a very large social network, formulate a very large web page graph. There are many, many graphs out there. I will not enumerate them one by one, but I think it's very safe to say we are living in a world of graphs. On the other hand, there are a bunch of graph algorithms out there. They compute on those graphs and they derive very, very valuable insights for our daily life. I will still use those data sets to see how they help our daily life. If you are an active user of Facebook, you must be very familiar with one of its functionality, its friend recommendation. Basically, this functionality is achieved through a kind of like a graph computation algorithm, is triangle completing. Triangle completing, we can use a very simple example to explain. Let's say we have three guys here, A, B, C. If A and B are friends and A and C are friends, then Facebook will try to make B and C become friends. So basically, it's formulating the completing the triangle of A, B, C. This helps Facebook because they have more active users, and then this helps us because we have more friends, right? And then shortest path is definitely used by navigation to figure out the route between the source and destination. PageRank, very, very famous. Everyone knows that, you know, Larry Page and his co-founders founded Google based on PageRank, and it's definitely very, very useful. It helps you to figure out my personal website. Matrix factorization is an algorithm I want to mention because it's used by a lot of e-commerce companies. They use this to recommend products to you. Let's say if you are buying a keyboard, then they're going to recommend you the mouse or the batteries, all those kind of things. Then, I mean, sometimes you may forget to buy those kind of things, but they recommend you, so you know you avoid this kind of mistake, right? This basically also helps Amazon because they make more money. I mean, graphs are so popular and graph algorithms are so valuable, so insightful, but unfortunately, graph is embracing a very big problem. I think yesterday and today we've been talking about is big data. So we call it a big graph, actually. So you can see in this figure, I mean, this can be very, very clearly presented by Facebook graph, which is a real world graph. X-axis is a timeline starting from quarter three of 2008 towards last year. And Y-axis is the active users by millions. We can see you've been increasing the active user a lot, right? Till last year, it's 1.8 billion active users. Imagine every active user has a lot of relationships. Then it's tens of trillions of edges. So if one edge takes several bytes, then it's really a large graph, even fitting DRAM. So I have to say this is a big challenge, makes graph computation more challenging. We have to address that, right? Because graph is really, really popular, there's a lot of works doing big graph analytics. I am trying to categorize them into a lot of, you know, metrics. So first, from price. First is the shared memory system. Shared memory system basically is trying to use a very high-end system. And then in this system, they have very high capacity of the memories. Then they fit in with the graph inside of the memory. But actually, this definitely is very costly because you have to fit all the graph in memory, right? And also, it's a high-end machine. To avoid this kind of high-end machine, you can definitely scale it to multiple machines with low-cost commodity small machines or clusters. Well, this is a little bit cheaper because you do not have to have those specialized fabricated machines, but it still costs you a lot. to really, really lower the price cost, we go to external memory option. So basically, for this kind of systems, they put in all the graph data instead of a disk. Well, we are here not just to say we want to lower the cost. We're also concerned about the performance, right? So for performance, we put in y-axis, we can say external memory and distributed system, they are pretty bad because they have to either go to disk to fetch the data or they have to communicate through different machines to fetch the data. This takes time, right? But shared memory, again, this guy best because it does not have to do those kind of communications. It's very effective. And the third dimension, we also look into the programmability. As we show the circles, small circle means easy programming and large circle means very hard. We can say external memory is really hard because you have to go through all the troublesome block layers. Everybody here must be very familiar with that. So, and then distributed system, you have to do MPI communication or MapReduce, something like that. You have to do that. You have to concern about that. This time, shared memory, again, is pretty good. It's very easy programming. It's just like you're programming your laptop in front of you, right? So we've been thinking, different corners are occupied. Why don't we occupy that most promising corner, right? We fight for that. We have this ambitious goal to achieve low cost, to achieve high performance, to also provide you as just like in-memory processing. Keep this in mind. Let's see how we achieve this ambitious goal through these slides. All right, so this brings me to today's agenda. We already covered a little bit about the background, and then we're going to talk about several techniques enables graphene to achieve those goals, and then we're taking all of them together, evaluate that, and then we do conclusion. All right, so first goal, low price. So it's cheap. Then if you want to achieve cheap, then we definitely have to use external memory alternative. To do that, we do not want to use rotational HDD because it's really slow, so we turn our face to solid state drive. And this is very affordable comparing to DRAM. It's more than 30 times cheaper. And then the bandwidth is also very good. Sequential I/O is like 540 megabit, and then random is a little bit worse. It's like 300 megabit. And then it's also very energy efficient. So this pretty much allows us to achieve 30 times cheaper. And then the second thing we want to cover is about very difficult to program. So here I have to mention is we are using Linux asynchronous I/O instead of POSIX I/O or user-level I/O because those guys have to cache the data instead of a page cache. Well, graph computation is very random, so caching definitely wastes you a lot of bandwidth. And second thing is POSIX I/O is really, there's some very slow stuff over there. We figured that out. All right, so keep in mind we're using Linux AIO. Let's see how it works. First, we have to open the file. You have the neighbor list file, which is the graph file. You use direct IO to open it, and definitely have to take care of some errors. And then you have to align a memory buffer. And then you set up IO context for you to do the asynchronous AIO, Linux AIO, and then you set up pretty much everything. So you figure out there's one vortex is active, and then you have to figure out from where to where this vortex has neighbors stored. So you figure out the begin address and end address, because it's not better addressable, so you have to align those blocks into blocks. Then you're ready to go. You submit the I/O into the I/O context with I/O buffers and all the stuff you already prepared. Then you have to decide when to pull this I/O request because it takes time. Shorter or longer is not good, so you have to test a little bit to tune. Sometimes, unfortunately, you're facing some bugs or some errors, so you have to take care of that to handle that, right? And then you get the data, but actually this time the data is not really the data you want because you do alignment. So then again, you have to strip out what is useful data because you have aligned me before, we mentioned before. And I want to mention here is like the yellow bubbles actually are lack of IO support. So it's not like the GCC, they provide you all the wrapper up stuff. You can use P-error to figure out errors. Here, it does not have this kind of support, so it takes time. Actually, this takes me several months to figure out all their tricks and all the bugs. I mean, if I were asked to do this kind of programming, I would rather not do that, right? So that's why I'm here. I'm trying to make it easy. My philosophy is I want Graphene to know what you want and then push whatever you want to you so you can do the computation. To do that, we show that the architecture of Graphene is basically on the upper level is different algorithms. APSP is all-pair shortest path, all the way down towards sparse matrix vector multiplication, or SPMV. And the bottom is the other SSDs. So in between is the I/O iterator. We call it an iterator because you are fetching the blocks one by one. So it's kind of like iterative fetching. So we call it like that. And then first, before we talk about that, we can see the lines of code. Previously, we have to use thousands of lines of code. Right now, we just use hundreds or less than 100 lines of code. With that, we can see how we're programming. We first knew the L iterator, and then we're done with it, right? So we go ahead and say if we have more active vortices, if we really do have, has more, then we get the current active vortices, and then you can get your neighbors by get neighbor, and then you can do computation. It's much, much easier. Second thing covered. The third thing is about performance. It's definitely the core of our concern. Here, let's see, we have a couple of active vortices in the list, in the queue, like vortex 5 all the way down towards vortex 3. So first, we have to convert. The bottom I have to mention, sorry. So it's like the neighbor list file. It's like what kind of vortices has the neighbors residing there. And to fetch those neighbors, we first have to convert those active vortices into IO request, like vortex 5 has neighbors in block 7. And then vortex 8 has neighbors in block 15 and 16 all the way down. So everybody here very familiar with I/O is like first they have to submit all those I/O requests into plug list. And then they do some smart things like do sorting and merging deduplication, right? But the thing is that deduplication and adjustment is limited in the plug list size, which is very small. And then sorting, if you really want to increase it, we do that. But it's going to be very costly if you increase the plug list size. And then you're done with the sorted stuff, and then you submit an I/O request, like block 1 and 7, block 15 and 16. So this time, because 1 and 7 are very close, so you merge them, and 15 and 16 definitely very close, right? Consecutive, you merge them. And second plug list, same thing, and third, same thing. So here we can say there's random I/Os, because whatever you submitted before, are not necessarily ahead of the second one or the third one. They're twisted from each other, right? And second thing is some of them are fetching those data twice or multiple times. This is actually random redundant I/O, right? To address this kind of problem, same active vortices, same neighbor list file. In between, we insert one thing, it's bitmap file. In this bitmap file, every block has one bit to indicate whether this block is needed or not. F is not needed, true is needed. So we convert it into true, like we convert different active vortices into their blocks by marking those bits as true or false. Like here, we can say if vortex 5 needs block 7, we mark the block ID 7 as true, similarly for other things. By marking first, the bitmap is actually a global level, right? Because you put everything in the same bitmap. And second is by marking that, you basically sort them. So it's hashing for sorting. And then you submit an I/O request for those blocks. Same here. Clearly it's sequential I/O, and clearly there's no redundant I/O because more marking of the same block gonna be single request. All right, so we want to use multiple SSDs to solve the problem. Definitely we have to partition the graph. Here we show the graph as a matrix, and then source vortex and the destination vortex. And then we say how conventional stuff or existing work do that. See, they actually make sure every block has the same amount of vortices, right? But we've been thinking, is really the same number of vortices matters? It's actually the number of edges, right? To do that, we first make sure every row has the same number of edges or red block dots, and then we go through the file again and figure out every block should have similar number of edges. Actually, by doing this, we have 2.5 times speed up on Twitter graph by comparing to the previous stuff. Packing all those I/O together, we figure out that actually I/O does not take, does not become the bottleneck anymore. By deduplication of the I/Os, by using a lot of SSDs. Like previously, you can see the left side, they are taking I/O takes majority of the time, but then we can see I/O takes fewer time, right? Less time. Then our target becomes another one, is computing. To improve the computing, we've been thinking we have to improve the caches, right? So two caches are the core of our concern. The first is last level cache, and second is TLB, right? So for last level cache, we see in the right side of the slide, we basically use page coloring stuff. Let's say you have two different types of virtual page, and then they are translated into different physical pages, and then they're mapping to different regions of the IOC. Let's say if two pages are very hot, then you do not want them to map to the same cache region because they're going to compete on the same cache line. So we're basically thinking of using this page coloring method to avoid those kind of competing stuff happening, right? But again, then we want to avoid the TLB miss as well. So we figure out that only using huge page can do that. So this actually conflicts, right? You can see that. Because when your page size becomes larger, your color becomes less. Then if you use huge page, possibly your entire IOC just have one color. So we compare the performance of page coloring for IOC and then TLB. We figure out that page coloring just have 5%. And the TLB has 10% to 15%. So we use TLB, which is huge page optimization. Well, then we've been thinking that using huge page for like accessing some data, we figure out that actually huge page has a problem because one I/O buffer may be even smaller, much, much smaller than huge page. So we have to use multiple I/O buffer to share the same huge page to do the job. There's a lot of techniques. I will not cover all of them. But you guys can go to our poster. We can do further discussion about that. So let's go to evaluation. We see we evaluate this graphene on this kind of machine. It has Intel Xeon CPUs, contains 12 cores, and 1 gigabyte huge page, and 15 megabyte ILC. So we use 256 main memory because we want to compare our system to other in-memory systems. And then we use 16 SSDs, and then we use those kind of OS and G++. Okay, let's see how it works on this kind of data sets. We've been concentrating on a couple of data sets. The first two is the social network, and the mean between four are web page graphs, and then we have two synthetic graphs from Graph 500. We can see the size is our focus because we really want to target huge graph. We can see the real-world graph, the largest one, is around 700 gigabyte. And then we also target like trailing edge graph, which consumes 8 terabytes. Let's see how it works. So this slide shows how graphene, the speed up of graphene over existing those very good frameworks. X-axis different algorithms, starting from APSP or parachutist path all the way down to WCCS weakly connected components. Y-axis is speed up of graphene over those systems. So the summary here is external memory were at least 3.6 times better and distributed system 20 times better. And shared memory, I have to say, there's no BFS included. I'm going to talk about it later. But without BFS included, we're actually 5% better than Galois and 16% better than Niagara. So to answer why we do not include BFS, we room in the speed up previously from 0 to 20, now to 1 to 5, 0 to 5 speed up. We can see BFS, we are much slower because we're completely using different algorithm for BFS. Well, for those systems, they use direction optimized BFS, and we cannot use that because for external systems, there's some random IOs and stuff of make decisions. It's very hard to do that. But details are very complicated. We can take it later. Well, for WCC, we're also slower because WCC experience a lot of iterations, and at the tail iterations, there's a lot of random IOs and you cannot batch it, so we're a little bit slower. All right, so because we use a couple of SSDs, so definitely we evaluate the bandwidth or throughput utilization of different SSDs. We can see we have X-axis is different timeline, and Y-axis is the throughput. So we show the minimum, medium, and maximum. One thing to point out, you can see the difference between them is like 10% to 15%. Sometimes a late ladder is even smaller. So it's, I mean, I'm satisfied about that. But you can see that because of the delay of a minimum, there are like 8 seconds of delay of the red line. So definitely there's some more improvement I can take care of that. So this brings me to today's conclusion. We've been designing Graphene with a couple of techniques, a couple of goals. Easy programming, check, right? We use, you know, IO-centric graph processing, make it very easy. And IO optimization and balancing technique together makes us very high performance as well as huge page optimization. So our conclusion or our goal sort of, you know, achieved. So we external memory storage, but we get a very good performance, same as in memory one. All right, thank you.
Hi, Sudarshan, Wisconsin. So, in one of the graphs, you showed that Xtreme performed significantly worse compared to Graphene for PageRank. Xtreme was a system that was optimized for I/O, cache, and TLB, and also implemented optimizations like huge pages. So, can you comment on why there was significant overhead?
That's a very good question. So I think I can put it into two ways. I mean, two categories that result in Graphene better than Xtreme. The first one is Xtreme has to fetch the edges, every edge of every iteration, right? All the way down, no matter how many iterations you have. But actually, for PageRank, at the tail of those computation, it's convergent. And then majority of those vortices does not have to be updated, because even though you compute, the result are going to be the same. This is a delta step of PageRank, right? Well, because Xtreme use asymmetric programming, so it has to fetch all the edges. But I mean, for us, because we only provide you a in-memory like IO iterator, so you can fetch the data, but you can definitely use delta step programming to achieve the same goal as Xtreme. So in conclusion, that at the tail of those computations, Graphene actually fetches a very small fraction of the edges to do the same computation. So that's why we are like fetching much smaller data and achieve the same thing.
So to clarify, you are meaning that your fetching logic is different compared to Xtreme, or the way you compute your graph is, the way you read your edges is different compared to Xtreme, or?
So I think your first guess is correct. We are fetching much less data at the tail of the computation. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know you were focused on high performance and you're testing with SSDs, but would your programming model work as well with hard drives?
That's a very good question. Actually, we got this review from FAST. They've been asking the same question. And we've been doing the tests as well, including the paper, where actually our techniques also work for rotational disk and also NVMe. I think you can check the paper. It shows like different techniques, like bitmap has also around 5%, not as much as like 30%, but still have some improvement over there. Huge page, definitely, yeah.
Any more questions? All right, I want to point out that you're graduating in a few months and looking for academic positions.